Hot dog. I am wicked excited about the publication of my new novel, which is called Felony Juggler. Got that? Felony Juggler. It'll come out on Akashic Books on May 6th. There's a special pre-order package now available that includes an autograph by me, because I wrote it, an autograph copy of the novel, three customized juggling balls. They say Felony Juggler and my name right on them. Really neat. Plus a beautiful signed print with two photographs of me during my street juggling days. Well, one street juggling and one Renaissance festival, which is kind of the same street juggling thing. But they're real pictures from that, because the book is kind of, half of it is kind of autobiographical about my street performing and Renaissance festival days. You can get all that stuff, three juggling balls, the picture, the autograph book, or you can just buy the book if you don't want all the fancy schmancy stuff. You can find all this at akashicbooks.com, akashicbooks.com, akashicbooks.com. For you Patreons out there, I've also given you a special code for a discount. And the discount is better than what it would cost you to be Patreon. But that's not important. AkashicBooks.com for my new book, Felony Juggler. I'm wicked proud of it. Here we go.
Brothers, sisters, siblings, welcome to Penn Sunday School. I'm Matt Donnelly, and Ready Rich, Penn and I are recording from our respective homes. Mine's on the ocean. And we are wrapping up a three-part Q&A with our Patreon listeners, but probably the last one of 2024, as we head into 2025 when you're hearing it, because Penn's in Australia. Here he is, preaching the love, Penn Jillette.
Yeah, here I am preaching the love for masterclass.com/Penn. For 15% off on lifetime learning, go to masterclass.com/Penn. Yeah. So, Tony, I just got, you'll be happy to hear this, as we are watching that, I've just got an email from Donnie Osmond, saying, just watched you on the Royal Variety Show. Good job.
Oh, that's nice.
Donnie's always very, very polite. We love Donnie Osmond. We have no complaints with Donnie Osmond.
No, I was rewatching the Danny D'Ortiz clip on Fool Us, and I forgot that Donnie grabs the deck from him right away and says, let me see these cards.
Now, Tony, did you just hold up a box that said Hookers and Blow?
I work at a library, and we're looking for good books to do Christmas story time. And this one is the one I was going to suggest.
It says Hookers and Blow Save Christmas.
Is that a real book?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's got pages and things. And,
it's not a joke? Is it a joke?
No, It's one of these things that obviously has a dual meaning. So, I don't know. It's cleaner than it looks.
Does anyone who supports us on Patreon, not a librarian? What kind of librarian are you, Tony?
I'm a library assistant, although. They're changing all the names soon. We're probably going to be civil guardians
football
by
stars.
The end of it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but I work in a small library in West London. But yeah,
a public library.
I do. I believe it's Stephen Mulhern's local library, as I bump into him in Marks and Spencer sometimes.
He's really very, very good.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Very nice guy, very supportive, very sweet, and a good magician, fine magician. I like him.
You were talking about your legacy or not thinking about your legacy or whatever. But I remember talking to Topaz, the German magician, and one of the big credits he says about Penn and Teller, he goes, artists and even like news organizations ask Penn and Teller what they think about stuff that isn't magic. And he says, and for that, there aren't many other magicians out there that get asked what they think about art or what they think about events.
That's weirdly true, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I never even thought of that.
Yeah, he says it's very odd for a magician to be asked what they think about anything besides a magic trick.
Yeah.
Who would the last person have been? Would it have been Houdini? Would that have been the last analog for that?
Masculine.
Yeah, Houdini was asked about other stuff. What's that?
Masculine.
Yeah. But is he after Houdini? He is. Yeah, he's after Houdini.
If Houdini were alive today, there'd be a lot of money to make him a judge on America's Got Talent.
Well, the thing people forget is Houdini was not the most popular magician of his time. He was the most popular star of his time.
That's what I mean, yeah.
It's a whole different thing. Houdini
would ask to not be mic'd, and so he'd give his feedback shouting from the back of the room.
Yeah.
I thought...
Harry Houdini, think that you are good!
It's a yes for me!
Houdini believed that when you were speaking, you needed to spell every word with your pronunciation. And there's one recording of Houdini, and it is so funny. I, Harry Houdini, will perform the water tank. And he used
That's
to...
That's what I like to say on that show.
He was a physical fitness nut, and we didn't even know what that was. And he would go out running, and he talks about being in like Russia or something, running, working on his patter. He'd be running. I, the great Harry Houdini.
Yeah, it would have been like him and Buster Keaton, right? The two people in that era that cared about physical fitness.
Yeah. Everybody else thought if you could sit down and do nothing, that was good. Yeah, he was also the first mainstream performer to perform nude. You know, there are pictures of Houdini virtually nude. He has his handcuffs in front of his dick, a position we've all been in before. But he had pictures taken of him during that.
A bit like the Turin shroud, right? Basically the same positioning of the hand.
Yeah, exactly. Now, is the Turin shroud in England? Is it the Shroud of Turin over here?
I think it's a bit of both. Okay. I mean, it's let's face it, it's probably a fake, right? So
you think maybe possibly, yeah.
Quite possibly, yeah.
Really is Jesus Christ turkey drippings, right? I mean, it's this weird thing of it's his rotting body leaving grease stains. I mean, it's just unpleasant.
Yeah.
Boy, who's JKW? They've got a question about his performing at Vic's. How nutty is that?
How nutty is that? Yes, I was there at that performance with my wife and watched you play with Jeff and Mike. And my question about that performance is wondering if I had the correct read on you. For a few of the songs, you would do like a 4-8 bar little solo in the middle of the song. And Mike would really like it. And he would look over at you and give you that musician nod of, go ahead and take another 8. The read I got from you looked like laser daggers coming out of your eyeballs back at Mike saying, go fuck yourself with a hammer. Like you were just so intensely staring at him like, dude, no, I just did it. Let me just get through the rest of the song, you son of a bitch.
I will. You're exactly right, except it's usually 24 bars. It's much longer than you thought. I'm glad it flew by for you. But I remember I played the Green Mill with Jonesy. I went up and did one number with Jonesy. And I went on stage and said, and I wasn't joking. I said I was the closest to vomiting I'd ever been doing a show. I was so terrified. When I play the bass, I am so scared. Just so scared. And I'm trembling and I'm miserable. But I wanted to do it, and I love music, and it's important to me. But I want to tell you, the bravery exhibited by me playing bass on stage is greater than any member of SEAL Team 6 doing anything.
Fair enough.
Do you have any plans to play bass public besides the Penn & Teller show? Are you going to do any bass concerts out?
Jonesy and I are talking about doing some other stuff. You know, we have a standing offer at Vic's to play whenever we want. We have a standing offer at the Green Mill. But I'm telling you, I don't really exist for 2025.
Oh, yeah. You guys have no
The 50th anniversary is so jam-packed. And now that we added this special show for Amy, there's just so much work we have to do. So, and also my book comes out May 22nd, and that's a lot of little bags to put my balls in before I send them out.
Well, you're handling your 50th anniversary so far better than Saturday Night Live is, because the only thing that's come out in all their big celebrations is how underpaid they are to start when they start out on Saturday Night Live is the only thing to break in the 50th anniversary celebration. Yeah. Pete Davidson talked about how featured players are paid $3,000 an episode to start, and that's the only news item that's come out from these podcasts and celebrations they're doing for their 50th anniversary.
Yeah. Okay. Then have someone else take the job.
Oh, that's it. I would still take it right now. $3,000 an episode. Let's go.
Does he really think? I mean, if you want to talk about what the market would allow, I'm guessing they could get very talented people for $25 a week on Saturday Night Live.
marketplace.
If it was a true marketplace, they could get cab fare. So I think maybe shut the fuck up. And I'll also say to that same thing, I was so smart, 50 years ago to put Teller on salary. Even though his hourly has bumped up pretty high, it was a very wise move.
Are you going to do, because it's the 50th anniversary of SNL as well, are you going to go on and do the upside down bit on SNL this year?
Well, first of all, we did the upside down bit that damn nearly killed us, and we swore we'd never do it again because it was so painful and unpleasant, and we've done it twice since then. So, but now we're old enough, I don't think we can consider that. Although we did this great thing, which kind of went unnoticed, but I was proud of it, where we did one episode of Fool Us, where we had two women do the upside down bit.
Yes.
And there was actually a trick that they came up with that we didn't think of that was really good, of blowing up a balloon with just your breath and having it float in the air, which was fabulous. I'll also tell you that both women doing it, which is Jen Kramer and
Amberlynn Walker.
Oh, I love her. I love Amberlynn Walker. They were both great. And they did a wonderful job. And I think their upside down bit is actually better than ours. It's really good. Yeah. They have some added tricks and stuff. It's wonderful. But they were both really thrilled with how their breasts look. They were both so taken with that they didn't complain much about how much it hurt them. Although they were both much more physically fit and also much smaller than we were.
Yeah. That was great.
If they invited you on the 50th anniversary show of SNL and you had the time, would you do it?
Well, we wouldn't do the upside down bit.
No.
We'd love to do the show. There's a big series of documentaries being done on Saturday Night Live, and we do a long interview about the season we were on.
What about the snake? Can you do the snake again?
I can do the snake again. The snake was good.
I like the idea that Tony asked you if the phone rang for you guys to do TV, would you say yes? I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
if you're busy, though, obviously it's not going to happen, is it? Yeah.
But, and Lauren claims this is still true, us cutting the snake in half and send that live is the most complaints Saturday Night Live ever got for anything.
Wow.
Which is pretty strong.
Yeah.
And it's not even close. And to add to that, Saturday Night Live is the most complaints NBC ever got. So it's the most complaints in NBC's history. And I believe that NBC got more complaints than CBS and ABC. So I believe it may be the most complained about, other than, of course, the Super Bowl, because Janet Jackson's nipple is so much more offensive than anything else in the world.
Right. Yeah.
Did you get as many complaints as when Elvis Costello did Radio Radio?
Yes. Lauren says more. Lauren says more complaints. Yeah, that was a great moment with Elvis Costello. But not as great as the next moment, which I saw. He went on Tom Snyder's Tomorrow Show like 2 years later. And he said in the really smug, smarmy voice that I actually enjoyed, he said, they talked about doing radio. What happened was Elvis Costello wanted to do a tribute to Jimi Hendrix. And Jimi Hendrix went on a British TV show, had agreed to do one song, started doing it, and then said, no, that's not right. Let's do this.
Yeah, it was Lulu. On a live TV. It was the Lulu show, and he did a Cream song. He did Sunshine of Your Love instead.
Mm-hmm. And so Elvis Costello, in tribute to that, went out to do one song, started it, and then said, no, let's do this other song, did Radio Radio. And Lauren was furious, and said he would never work on NBC again, ever. And Elvis Costello tells that story to Tom Snyder and says, they said I'd never be on NBC again. Tom, what network is this? And it was of course, NBC. Ax just asked, more complaints than Sinead O'Connor ripping up the phone with the Pope. It can't be. That can't be true. You're absolutely right. I'm reporting what was told to me, but it must be.
You know how many?
Just using common sense. No, I don't.
At least 12.
To clarify,
12, right?
As an atheist,
at least 12.
I fully support what she did, speaking as an atheist. I was just assuming that would probably top the list of complaints.
That's actually a fine example.
So. I've got 4,400 for Sinead.
That's a fine example of, before the internet, I believe Sinead would have gotten a lot more people having her back in the internet era than what happened in mainstream media when she did it.
Well, also it would have just gone into the outrage algorithm, just.
Yeah. Yeah. But enough people would have agreed with her or supported the thing, I think. Monica Lewinsky is obviously the number one example of that always, I think, is that we just collectively as a culture, mainstream just trashed her constantly and never once had her, no one had her back in any kind of mainstream way that I think would have happened instantly now.
Yeah, but that stuff like that changes so quickly. I mean, really, in 1995, gay marriage was considered to be at least 50 years away.
Yeah, that's true.
And also, nobody ever predicts the pendulum going the other way. I never thought in the 21st century things would get more oppressive. And yet they are, and they're going to get worse. And it seems impossible to me. I mean, Lorne Michaels told me that even in the 90s, things are getting more conservative, so that NBC would not let them rerun certain Saturday Night Lives that had gone out because the censorship had changed. And I just believed, this is just another example of how stupid Penn is. I believed in 75 that women's rights, gay rights, and racism would not be issues within 10 years. I just thought that was all going to be fixed. It seems so obvious without a doubt. And the reason, Pax, I'm looking at you, you become my new Amy. the reason I'm not putting trans in there is because it wasn't part of my mindset. I mean, I knew people who were what we would call trans now, but we weren't using that term. You know, I was a huge fan of Lou Reed, and Lou Reed in 75 was married to a trans woman. That was natural for me and no problem at all. But I didn't, I wasn't aware of there being a trans white rights movement. I think I wasn't aware of it because there wasn't one.
I wasn't aware of trans issues either. I didn't transition until just 10 years ago. So this was, and I'm 54 now. So this is, you know, educational for a lot of people.
You weren't born in 75, right?
So. I was born in 70. So.
Okay. Yeah. So at 5 years old, you weren't dealing with trans rights very much.
Obviously not. Although, to be fair, some five-year-olds do discover, you know, their gender mm-hmm. identity that early. But, right. I mean, I grew up, you know, mostly in West Virginia where, you know, even being gay was not discussed. So I had no vocabulary for these things until, you know, I moved out to California and got on the internet.
Well, one of the reasons is West Virginia has no vocabulary for anything. Hey, come on. That's not fair. Shut up.
That's
not. Why beat up someone else just because of that? Don't be as bad as that. Okay, I agree with all that. I was wrong.
It is true that, yeah, West Virginia is considered very backwards and has very low spending on health and education and all that. But, yeah.
Whereas Nevada is a beacon of public education and high ranking.
Now, Winter, do you just want to talk about how the Christian right started that whole movement after the abortion thing and after the, I think we talked about that a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in, I just moved from Texas a month ago, but that's where I grew up. And so we've talked a lot about this just with people that I know. So in 1979, they decided to make abortion an issue to unite the right. And up until then, there was like a letter that you can find from, can't remember his name, but one of the higher ups, you know, in the conservative movement, someone had written him and asked about abortion, and he said that it was of no consequence. And so they created the abortion issue around then. And since then, and with Reagan.
Well, you're leaving out a really important thing, which is the reason they created the abortion issue was because they said that schools couldn't receive funding if they were racially segregated. Yep. And they knew that we want more money to keep people of other races out of our schools was not going to be a way to grab moral high ground. So they pretended it was abortion so they could set that whole thing up. And then they worked on setting everything up that's now in motion now. Yep. And I do not like using words like brilliant and smart for people who are doing things that are so hateful. But it was certainly a well-thought-out, well-laid-out battle plan that they stuck with.
Yeah,
and
I think they...
to the point that we even pretend now that abortion was the issue. They were completely successful in selling that.
Yeah, they and they've been playing the long game. You know, I mean, I was born in 74. So, I mean, that's been going on pretty much my entire life. And a friend of mine has a good point, and that is that it may have come to a head because of the backlash with gay marriage and also with a black president. So that may have sped their agenda up a little bit because that freaked people out. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think Obama's on record of saying that a lot of the backlash was his fault. He means his fault that there was a black president.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact is, and it's always uncomfortable to say this, but high school educated white men are really suffering tremendously. And that suffering is being exploited. And I heard a speaker saying that we have to remember that empathy is not a zero-sum game. And you can talk very much about the suffering of trans and people of color and women. That doesn't mean that young white men aren't suffering as well. And the deaths of despair, the numbers are the most startling they've been in history. Death of despair for young white men in this country have gone up by incredible factors. If you have a morgue with five suicide victims, statistically, four of them are men.
Wow.
Which is incredible. It used to be almost evenly brought. And when you add crimes, when you add deaths of despair, they throw in drug overdoses, drunk driving, and along with suicide, it goes up through the roof. And one of the reasons is that women, and there's nothing wrong with this, no saying, but they overwhelmingly mate with people at a higher rank than theirs. Mm. So that leaves the people at the bottom. You have many, many men who will not only not be able to marry well, but may not even have a date.
Yeah.
And we don't know the amount of damage that does, but it is enormous. And also, another way to look at this is people like me, uneducated, but white male, had huge advantages that were out of line with people of color and diverse people of all kinds. And now the younger people are being punished for the advantages I had.
Yeah.
And that that is a kind of weird unfairness. You know, you can't, I mean, if we were trying to do some sort of real fair stuff, you would take the money away from the people who got it unfairly and give it to the people that didn't get it fairly. But there's no way to do that distribution. So you end up punishing people who are really, really suffering. And I want to add to this, to put a positive spin on it, because we don't want to leave this such a bummer. Men are just wicked better at suicide.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah. Yeah. My degree's in psychology. And I was like, yeah, men tend to go off in the woods with a shotgun, whereas a woman will overdose in her apartment or something like that. You know?
Yeah. It's amazing. So you've got the suicide attempts of young women have gone through the roof. But the suicide successes of young women haven't improved at all. Another way to put this is they're fuck ups. Whereas,
no, is that the way to phrase it? Is that how we want to phrase it?
So. They're trying something and they're failing. What other way do you put it, Matt Donnelly? How are you going to spin this?
Man,
whereas
when we go from here to a masterclass ad, it's going to get weird.
I did a lecture actually at the university that I work at about transitioning from female to male and discovering what white male privilege felt like. And that was in Texas, though, so it may be a stronger thing. But I thought it was just kind of going to be a fun little lecture about psychology and history and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And I ran into exactly what you're talking about. I was like, oh, okay. So I had to really kind of change the direction. Yeah.
You know, the suicide rates, I believe, are the highest. If you take away my income, which is like saying if you take away height from the basketball player, but if you take away my income, my education, part of the country I'm from, all of that puts me in the highest risk for suicide. And for those people, for white men, high school educated white men over 50, the suicide success rate is wicked high. And all of that is guns, really, because guns are just better at it than the other way. Yeah. And one of the big weird things about gun control is if you eliminate guns, suicide rates go down tremendously. Never mind violence against other people. It just goes really down because guns are really good at suicide. They're wicked good. And I don't mean by that guns are good at killing themselves. The best at that are power saws who are really good at cutting their own cords.
My lawnmower growing up was electric, and I would do that on purpose so I didn't have to mow the lawn anymore.
Yeah. Well, that is because you, sir, are a genius. I want to say, watch this segue, that one of the non-despair things you can do is lifelong learning.
That's right.
Lifelong learning is a great way to give more to talk about. more happiness in the world. And one of the best ways to do that is Masterclass. I also want to say that Masterclass has been supporting us forever. Without Masterclass, there would not be Penn Sunday School. They're tremendous. Masterclass is one of the only jobs I ever went after. I loved Masterclass so much that I actually went to them and said, can Penn and Teller do one? I've never explained that before, but I actually said to Glenn, I think we should do a Masterclass. And they did not disappoint. They made us better than we ever would have been. They shot it better. It was just terrific. And everybody they have on there, 180 plus instructors in 11 categories, really do. I mean, I don't want to say this about Noam Chomsky or Steve Martin, but I bet they're better with Masterclass than they would be without. I just know that people that you've heard lecture in other forms, it's just not as clear and not as good as Masterclass. And you can listen while you're exercising. You can listen while you're driving. You can also watch. There's also supplementary material. And you also, it's really what a liberal arts education should be. It's not to learn things to get a job, although you can do that. It's just learning stuff so that you're a better person and so life is more interesting. You want to name a few, Reddy?
I would like to name Mindy Kaling has just added one.
Oh, really?
I'd like to do that together with Matt.
I love her.
That David Lynch one's good.
David Lynch one is good. So right now, our listeners get an additional 50% off an annual membership. That means it includes everything. At masterclass.com/Penn.
Penn.
Get 50% off right now at masterclass.com/Penn.
Penn.
Masterclass.com/Penn.
Penn.
And please, please don't judge Masterclass on what a clusterfuck it is we try to do that thing over Zoom with the delays. That blame goes to Zoom.
Quick side note, I recently interviewed a magician named Alexander Boyce. Are you aware of Alexander Boyce?
I am.
So but he told a great Johnny story, but basically somehow as a teenager magician got into doves and doing dove acts in modern times. So of course ended up writing to Johnny, and Johnny and him would write back and forth. And he told this great story about how basically Johnny was as encouraging and polite as possible, told him he was doing not the best job with the videos that he was sending with the doves. Mm-hmm. And that if he wanted to come out to Vegas, you know, he could teach him in person if he was ever out in Vegas. So his parents sprung for him to go out to Vegas, but he wasn't 21 yet. He was, I think, 20 or 19 or something like that. And because of that, he couldn't get a hotel. So Johnny met up with the hotel to put the hotel in his name, and he said it was the weirdest look on the people at the Marriott's faces when Johnny Thompson rolled in with his Cadillac, pointed to this young 19-year-old and was like, here, get him a hotel room and put his stuff down.
You know, that's a really interesting thing, that the same thing I was listening to about young men. Guy was on Bill Maher saying that there's a few society things that are really important. One is, and I'm putting this in my terms, not in his, when women don't get laid, when they don't get fucked, when they don't have romantic partners, they tend to put that energy into friends, community, and work. That romantic energy and sexual energy gets sublimated in those forms. Young men who don't get laid completely isolate, completely.
Yeah.
No community, no help, no nothing. They sit in the basement and play video games and are filled with hate. So women, if you have a choice between not fucking a woman and not fucking a man, not fucking the woman is going to do more help for the world than not fucking the man. But also women, and you can talk to, you know, my friend Carrie Coleman. She has two daughters, and she ran a Girl Scout troop. And if any of the girls had trouble, Carrie would talk to them one-on-one. No problem. Never even thought about it. And this guy who was on Bill Maher's show said, you know, we need strong men that actually mentor 14, 15, 16-year-old boys who don't have a strong father figure in their life. And Bill Maher said, I'm not going to fucking do that. I'll go to prison. An adult man will not be in a room alone with a 14, 15, or 16-year-old boy.
Right.
Because of priests, because of priests, because of Boy Scout leaders, because of coaches. There's so much press about that that you just don't do it. So if you're a 15-year-old girl who has a problem and doesn't have a strong female role model, you can go to many women and they'll sit down and talk with you. If you're a young man in that similar position, there's no adult man who's going to talk to you. And the exception is, of course, Johnny Thompson. And you just underlined that 1,000 times by saying going in and getting a hotel room with somebody who wanted to help out looked really creepy.
Yeah.
And yet a woman going in with a young woman, you know, a young dancer or something, going in and getting her a room would not be considered creepy at all.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Look, priests and Boy Scout leaders made a huge stamp, put a huge stamp on our culture in a terrible way. And epically so. I mean, and it was all, you know, a lot of it being very true.
But my children have friends, and many of the young men that both of them know don't have strong father figures in their life, and they're struggling. And I would never consider taking one of them aside alone and giving them advice. That is just totally inappropriate to me. And if it were a young woman, my wife would easily talk to them.
Is Big Brother still a thing?
You mean being surveilled by the government? Yes.
I also the program.
Yeah, I think that Big Brother's still going on. And I was kind of listening to this. I was kind of feeling guilty because I have done exactly zero mentoring in my life. The closest I've come is maybe you and maybe Piff, and you were both over 30 at the time.
Right. No, I mean, I basically used to teach improv a lot when I was in my 20s at high schools and other places like that. And I really felt that that was vital. And I used to always recommend if someone moved to a new city or new town to take improv classes. Not that improv itself is whatever, but everyone who takes a level one improv class is taking the same risk. Everyone is inexperienced. Everyone has heard about it. And so there's a real bond that forms with people who take their first improv classes together. And the improv technique thing does make you a better storyteller, does make you a better listener, and does give you to-dos when interacting, you know? And so I was always a big proponent of it. And I used to look back at, like, both youth and adults, like, growing up, the things that I would find to be, you know, so formal and stupid as a teen, if there were, like, specific dances or specific things that people went to. And also, like, you looked at, like, you know, certain clubs, you know, that considered old for old people, you know, like, whatever, they wear the stupid hat. What's it called now? I'm trying to remember.
Shriners.
Yeah, Shriners and things like that. Like, we stopped doing that, right? And
although, in fairness, almost all organizations wear stupid hats.
Right. I'm not even in an organization. I wear stupid hats all the time.
Right, exactly.
But you know, these things that we have let kind of come apart and we really replace them with nothing. Even, I know, as atheists, right? Like, going to church on Sundays, there's a lot of flaws with churches. We just mentioned those priests. But forcing your community to make sure that they meet in an area and kind of check in with each other at a particular time, atheists, we have not come up with a good replacement for that.
Well, we're talking about the epidemic of loneliness.
Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, I also watched it even as long ago as my father and mother. My mother had her card club, her bridge club, her bowling club. She had all her, as she called them, girlfriends that she did all these things with. My dad had nobody.
Yeah.
My dad was talking to my mother, me, or my sister or he was alone. And I mean, once every 3 months, one of the guys he used to work as a jail guard with or as a sheriff with would come by and say, "Hi, Sam, how you doing? I was on my way there. Didn't you have a lawnmower part that maybe I could borrow?" And that was an interaction of like 15 minutes. And it was like then for 2 days afterwards, he was talking about everything that Chet said.
Oh, I remember my dad, his cousin and his uncle would come visit, cousin Peter and Uncle Hap. They'd smoke cigars in the living room. And I've never seen my dad happier than when those guys would visit. They'd just sit in the living room and make jokes and joke around forever. And that was everything. Mm-hmm.
And I feel myself doing it. You know, Biff has to call me up 3 times before I go and have coffee with him. He works harder on the relationship than I do. And I feel the urge to just sit alone in my living room, you know, by myself. That's what alone means. I just want to make sure that in case you didn't know the word alone.
No, but also, but you, entertainers, we get a lot of stimulus from people, more than the average. Even if you were alone, you're doing 5 shows a night at the Rio with people applauding and clapping and cheering your name. Yeah. I think a lot less people would be suicidal if they had thousands of people cheering and applauding them all the time.
Although Springsteen manages to be. Springsteen could have 50,000 people yelling Bruce, and he's still depressed, right?
Yes, he still needs to get a different cocktail from a different psychiatrist. Yeah. That's different. But yeah.
But it was a really interesting thing that there's this problem with loneliness. And you know, a big part of that is churches falling apart and America moving around, you know?
Also, I mean, this is what actually disheartens me a little bit even more is because I felt like that bluff was called big time during the pandemic, where we thought with social media, what interacting in online with video games and like meeting over Zoom and all these other things that we thought could technologically solve what we were doing, I think we all found out big time that that bluff was wrong. That boy, it does not work during the pandemic.
And then we did nothing to fix it.
Nothing. Right?
We said, boy, we were lonely during the pandemic. Can't wait to get out of this. Oh, yeah. We're going to stay lonely. That's our decision.
Yeah. And I mean it. Like, I was always surprised at all the memes backing up, like, oh, going out is awkward, or like all these memes, like celebrating how I secretly will bail on everybody and not go out. And I want to stay home and I never want to put on pants again, that kind of stuff. And we just celebrated that we were going to stay lonely. And I think it's strange. I think it's really weird.
It is. It's a very strange and lonely thing. And we know statistically that the more single men you have under 25, men without women in their lives, the likelihood of war goes up. Mm. And we have that in China. We have that in the U.S. And oh, we're done. all you need, and Russia too. So if you're placing your money on peace, it might not be the time to do it. It's a terrifying thing. And the problem is, it is not going to be solved by hating young men. And another way to put this is, and I don't like to even say this name, so I won't even say it. The billionaires we have now that are public billionaires are a poor person's idea of what a rich person is. They're also a weak person's idea of what a strong person is. Because we know, and this has been said in every culture, by every religion and every philosopher, whether you're talking Buddha or Jesus Christ, whether you're talking Richard Dawkins, a truly strong person is not cruel. A truly strong person is loving and caring. That's what strength is. And we now have people that are pretending to be strong by being mean. And that is a weak person's idea of what strength looks like. What strength looks like is loving other people and being kind. Strength does not look like fuck you. Strength never looks like fuck you, ever. Strength looks like helping out the weakest among you. And that is every fucking philosophy. That's Aristotle. That's Jesus Christ. That's Buddha. That's everybody. Everybody. That's Bob Dylan. That's everybody. Because I almost thought we were going to get through this without saying Bob Dylan, so I had to put him in, even though it's an inappropriate reference. And that's what we have. And until those weak people and those poor people feel loved and taken care of, they're going to keep looking up to dipshits. You know, we're going to keep making heroes out of fall guys. We now have heroes in our... Well, yeah, someone just said Andrew Tate. Okay, good. Andrew Tate, that's all we're talking about. Who said Andrew Tate?
That was Tony Johnson.
Yeah,
Tony.
Yeah. Andrew Tate, and we're done. Yeah. But Andrew Tate, we know, is not the big problem. Because, by the way, I'm crying a little bit.
No, that's like, what you're saying is like people taking advantage of the opportunity. The same deft move that was made to make abortion the issue in the 1979, that we're going to look back at this time, as the same thing. This is when political operatives took advantage of weak young men, and this is what happened because of it.
And I'm just telling you, I'm just a message out to women and gays. Just to save our society, fuck a guy who can't get laid, okay? I mean, sure, you've got your support groups, okay? You've got your community service. Just take Tuesday night is I'm going to fuck a loser night. How much harm is that going to do?
It's a start. It's a start.
Yeah, Winter points out that Stoicism... Marcus Aurelius, all those people all say the exact same thing. the idea that we've fallen so far back that strength looks like weakness is just amazing. You know, and you know, we even have Batman who helps the fucking police. Batman, get your ass to the fucking ghetto and help the people that need it. The police do not need your fucking help. The police have bulletproof vests and they have fucking armed vehicles. Batman, get your ass down to where people need it.
And a wicked good bass player.
It's not rocket science, Batman.
What is that from?
That's from our show. That's from Penn Central.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, what was that?
It was a guy who came up to you, online, advising someone else how to operate their phone when taking a photo with you on the photo line.
It's not rocket science, Batman. Boy, is that great. Boy, is that great. I forgot that. Yeah, Batman, the others. Fuck you, Ryan Johnson. Let's leave with that. You wait, okay? When Marty Supreme comes out and some of you go see it, I'm sure you're going to pull a line from that I do sucky. And the bad news is, did you see the picture? First of all, I was very skeptical of Complete Unknown, the Dylan movie.
Mm-hmm.
Then Phil Proctor saw it, who knows Dylan, knew all those people. He said he's seeing it again.
Whoa.
I know a couple other Dylan nuts that love it, okay? But, and I don't have the pictures right here to show you, but it's incredible. Timmy Chalamet showed up at the opening for Complete Unknown wearing a gray knit cap with a little bit of blonde bangs, a very obvious scarf, a plaid shirt, and a particular coat, little mustache. Everybody looked at him in Complete Unknown and said, oh, he looks nice. Why is he dressed like that? And those of us who are hardcore Dylan fans knew he was dressed exactly like Bob Dylan. Not Complete Unknown times, but Bob Dylan now.
Oh.
An exact impersonation.
Oh, that's great.
I'll send you the pictures, and you can also send them to the Patreon people. They're the greatest pictures you'll ever see.
I wouldn't have got it either. I would have missed it.
Yeah, everybody missed it until everybody got it. It's so good. It's so good. But I don't know. I had such low expectations, a complete unknown. Now I think it might be great, really great.
All right.
And with that, because we're talking about Dylan and not Deaths of Despair, I will say that was Ben Sunday School brought to you by masterclass.com/Ben.
Ben.
And you can get 15% off right now. Lifelong learning. Go to masterclass.com/Ben.
Ben.
That was Penn Sunday School. That was Penn Sunday School. Cha cha cha. You become naked.
Yeah,
you see that picture of Bob? It's exactly.
It's exactly it. It's pretty great.
It's so good. And so brilliant of Jimmy Chalamet. Did we please you, Amy? Did we please you today?
I am very pleased.
Good.
Yes.
You know, we love y'all. Hey, Matt Donnelly, you ready to thank?
Yes, I want to thank the following people who support us over at patreon.com/pen. Support our podcast if you can. Go over there right now and join people like Tony, trying to think of a good name for Blueberry Cocoa and Cayenne Pepper Ice Cream Johnson. Matthew Simino, Galactic President Scooper Star McScoops-a-Lot, Josh Zero, Ben, Harry the Girl Logician, Kevin Burke, David McLaughlin, Old Bear Greg, Beetlejuice Beat, Charlie Sheets says trans rights, No Shit Sherlock, Cactipides, Stephen Bryce Girdle says, Pops, there's so much like us. Coach Rat Bastard, Gaspacho Suave, David Wanna Finger Your Cunt Brenner, Sagebrush, Luke Mellon, Jason Andrew Davidson, Peter B. Clark, Matt Williams, Brad Sherlag, Steve Feldman, Jonathan P., NewRuleFX.com, Krista Hatchby Luke McKinney, Danny, insert meta joke here, Ruse. I wasn't ready, now I lost Penn's pen. Ah, shit, my dog pissed on Matt's mat. Adam Stickney, Sax Guy Jimmy D., Nathan Julian, Jeremy in Shanghai, Chris Harris, Bill Newton, Daniel Nostrum.
My hand's getting ready.
Playing bass with my original band Traction, William Wengreen, Batman, David Kay, and I don't think I'm giving anything away here, Brandon Knapp, Nick Dingman, Colin Durham, Susie Felber, Lancey Minshew, Michelle Geiser, Brogan Hastings, Placida Scott, Damian Martin, and Garth Reynolds. Thank you so much.
Did I have my hand on my cock and balls for no reason?
Yeah, that's on the other list. It's on the other.
I've never done that before. Thank you.
I have an appointment with Laura's lawyer in Glen's Glen.